This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. The road to recovery requires dedication and focus. But what happens to your partner while you're zoned in on getting sober? New research from rehabs.com shows that there's a large emotional disconnect between individuals living in recovery and their partners. What's more difficult is that the loved ones are often ill-prepared for this journey and do not receive any support for themselves. My guest today, Nadine Horton, has been with her husband for 20 years since his recovery, and it hasn't always obviously been an easy road, but Nadine is here to talk to us about the good, the bad, the ugly of this journey, and share advice to others who are in a similar situation. Nadine, so grateful to have you with us today to talk about this, and welcome you to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I mean, you and I are just meeting, and I really love to be able to speak to this because there's so many people I know that are listening and that I work with day in and day out that, you know, have a loved one that is in recovery. And yet somehow, you know, it's a journey of figuring this out, but somehow need to understand that they also need to get their own help and heal themselves. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to this a little bit of how this is part of your journey?
I like to say that the family members of people who are dealing with addiction are the forgotten people.
Yes.
As always, the focus can and should be on the person with the addiction, but a lot of times we are the ones that are left behind. So while our loved ones are getting treatment, we tend to be stuck back where we were. So we are just trying to go ahead and live our lives the best way we know how, keep things going. Meanwhile, you know, our loved ones are getting help and we are just going through our day-to-day trying to get through.
Absolutely. And I think it's actually traumatic for people that are the victims in a way. I don't want to use that word always, but the people that are the loved ones of someone who is going through an addiction. And I don't think we speak to that trauma enough, you know, and it really is difficult. And I think therapy and counseling is really helpful. And I urge anybody that is going through this now to seek counseling in some way. Did you get counseling yourself?
No, I did not. When I was going through this process with my husband, there was nothing for me or people like mm-hmm. me. There was no treatment program. There was no support group that I was aware of at the time for people like me. So I just did my best to get through each day, you know, raise our daughter and deal with things the best I could.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell everybody a little bit about your story and how you've healed today and how you guys have come out on the other side?
So my husband, he'll have, in November this year, he'll have 16 years in recovery.
Okay.
And when he was active in his addiction, I was, for the most part, a single parent. So raising our daughter alone, just basically trying to get through each day, be as straightforward as I could with her, age appropriate about what was going on, but basically just trying to get through the day and completely put my focus on her, making sure that she was okay. Mm-hmm. In terms of dealing with anything, emotions, feelings, I pretty much just kept them stuffed down. There were many times I didn't know where he was. I didn't know if he was alive or dead. I didn't know if he was okay. I couldn't mm-hmm. let my mind completely go there because I had our child to raise. Mm-hmm. I like to say that our daughter was a blessing for both of us, but for me, especially because she kept me focused. So I couldn't dwell yeah. on what was going on with him because I had her to worry about. And I'm so grateful for that because that kept me going.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now, you know, well, first of all, so your husband wasn't always around. Did you know the signs that he was dealing with an addiction? Was it that obvious? You know, there's so many different levels of addiction and dependency.
Yeah.
You were clear about that. Okay.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of people listening that don't know whether their loved one is in major trouble. You know, I get that question all the time. But
When we first met years ago, so we met when we were like very young. So at first I didn't know. And then, as I'm sure lots of your listeners can attest to, you see things, but you don't make the connection. Maybe you're overreacting. Maybe it's nothing. So I didn't always connect the dots right away. But he was in active addiction when we met. But I didn't connect everything. I should have. In hindsight, and this is where some of the guilt comes in, I feel like I should have been able to pick up on some of that. And again, I know your listeners can attest to these feelings as well. I should have been able to see something. I should have been able to do something, but I didn't. I didn't know at the time. And by the time I realized what was really going on, it was too late. I was head over heels. So I just tried to ride it out the best I could with them.
Right. And then I'm sure you know the word enabling. I mean, you know, at some point though, when you love somebody, you want them to be better. So you enable without even really understanding that you are enabling.
Absolutely. I didn't even know what enabling meant. I just thought I was trying to be helpful. I was trying to keep up. I was trying to make sure he was okay. I didn't know what enabling meant. Back then, I was just trying to make sure he was okay.
And so, and then did he wind up receiving help, going to treatment? What has helped your family move forward in this?
So for a long time, we had lost contact for a little bit because that was done for a few reasons. He did not want our daughter to see him like that. So he stayed away. So there was a long period of time where I didn't know what was going on. So one day I got a call from him and he said, I'm in rehab. And I was like, okay. So we had lost touch for a while. And I got the call and he said, I'm in rehab. And I said, okay, are you okay? And he said, yes, he told me where he was. He told me a little bit about it, you know, what he was going to be doing, how long he was going to be there for. And I was grateful because now I knew, one, where he was and that he was okay, and two, that he was getting help. So I was extremely grateful for that. There was some, other than that, I can say that there wasn't much feeling beyond that because I had to disconnect in order to keep moving forward. So mentally, I'm grateful he's safe, he's okay, he's getting help, and that was it. And then for a long time, he focused on his recovery. So there was not much contact, probably for the first few months of his recovery. He was in a 6-month program, so he was away for a while.
Wow, that's fantastic. He committed that much time. It's really
Yes. And we're fortunate because our state at the time, the medical insurance covered it, the Medicare or whatever the state insurance was covered that for him at the time. So that's why treatment programs are so very, very important. And your listeners need to make sure that their state, wherever they may be, have adequate treatment programs for, you know, our loved ones, because this literally saved his life. I'm not exaggerating or overstating when I say this. This literally saved his life. So he was away for 6 months. And then towards the end, and I should also mention, in this treatment program, they also taught, it was gender focused, so it was a men's program. They also taught them not only how to deal with their addiction and embrace recovery, but also how to become a better father.
Amazing.
Which was something that was obviously very important because he was gone for the first, you know, 11 years of our daughter's life. So he needed to learn how to become a father. So towards the last maybe month or so, that's when he reached back out and said, you know, I'm going to be getting out soon. Would you guys want to come for a visit? And I said, yes.
Oh, thank gosh. Thank gosh that he took the time to, because it is a rewiring of your cognitive thoughts and your mind and how to live and how to have a new identity and how to have new beliefs and create new patterns and all of that. Right. So it's
absolutely
it's fantastic. I always urge people, the longer you invest, the better off you're going to be in terms of long term sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really important. Do you mind? Is the treatment center still up and running? That he went
to? Yes, it's Crossroad in New Haven.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because, you know, people are listening out there and they're like, that's exactly what, you know, I'm looking
for.
They
have they have a women's program and they have a men's program, and they've been so very, very helpful in getting many people to the point of recovery and being able to, you know, go back to their lives and to their families.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's Crossroads. That's great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, as you were speaking, I was just thinking, like, you know, it's for your daughter and yourself, there's a point then when somebody does heal and comes back to you better and more clear. And then I think that the feelings of, you know, being kind of the victim in all this and learning how to forgive have to be addressed for you, know, because that resentment that loved one, I think from what I've personally understood and been in this industry for 10 years, it that's what comes up a lot, is the resentment of, oh, now you're fine, what about me? And now you're fine and you want to go back like nothing happened, you know, and then that resentment builds. So can you speak to a little bit about how you know, have addressed forgiveness in your own life?
So I would say there were a few things going on. There was definitely resentment. There was anger. There was guilt. There were a lot of things going on, and letting that go took a while. The resentment for missing so much of our daughter's life, having to carry the burden of all of this on my own, you know, trying to provide for her, having to explain, you know, where he was and what's going on and why he's not here. Anger, because there were things that I would like to have done that I couldn't do because I had to do all this on my own. And also, you know, why can't you just stop? And why can't you come back? Why aren't we enough to make you stop this? And then guilt for, why didn't I see this sooner? How could I have helped? Was there anything I could have done to make this better? When he got out, for guilt for feeling resentment and anger, guilt for feeling like, why aren't you just happy that he's better? There's just a lot. And again, I didn't know how to deal with these things because I didn't have a program to go through to say, these are the stages you're going to go through, and it's okay if you go through these stages, and this is absolutely normal, and don't feel bad, and this is how you cope. I didn't have any of that. So I didn't know really what to do. And it wasn't until it took a while, but it wasn't until we really started to have honest conversations about how I was feeling, how he was feeling, that the resentment and the anger and the guilt started to go away for me. And I started to forgive him, and I started to forgive myself for feeling the way that I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what a process, and what an emotional waves come along with that process. So I know, and I don't, have you ever been to like a meeting for yourself, like Al-Anon or...
I have
counseling since then. Okay. So just for people that are listening out there that do need help immediately and that are going through exactly what you just talked about, that, you know, Al-Anon is a 12-step program that does exist, that is somewhat, pretty much in every community, that is very helpful for people. There's, you know, counseling on different levels, therapy, marriage and family therapy. There's so many different outlets of getting help outside your own home, which I encourage just to understand things a little bit better. And like you said, I think the whys of like, why can't you just stop? I mean, that's pretty much the most common question that I get when I'm doing family sessions with clients is, why can't he just stop? Why can't she stop? Like, I don't understand. And it's not about willpower. It's about understanding the disease of addiction, if you want to call it a disease, or the ailment of addiction, or whatever, however you want to verbally communicate it. If there is something to understand about this, and that it's not about willpower. It's an emotional, physical, mental, biological ailment that really takes over our lives and can destroy it, as you know.
Right. And I just want to step back for a minute and just say that there is a phenomenal online community for support for both the people with addiction and the loved ones of the people with addiction. I have found that the online recovery community has been life-changing in helping me with my own recovery. You know, websites like recovery.org, Twitter has online chats every week where you can talk to literally people who are in the field, clinicians, doctors, you know, rehab programs, and other family members, as well as people themselves who are in recovery from addiction. And we, the viewpoint and the perspective that we bring to the conversations, and they are tough, you know, conversations. They're very honest, open conversations. And the fact that we can do this online and you can connect with people literally all over the country and sometimes the world has been phenomenal for me, because what people need to remember and be okay with is that not everybody is comfortable in a group setting like an Al-Anon, and that doesn't always work for everybody. And unfortunately for loved ones of those dealing with addiction, we don't have a lot of options. So we have Al-Anon, we have Nar-Anon, that's pretty much it. And if you don't, if that doesn't work for you, sometimes you can feel like, okay, well, now what do I do? There is a huge online support community that will help you in ways and help you open up in ways that you couldn't even imagine. So I would highly, you know, suggest people look into that as well.
Yeah. Recovery.org, Twitter, any other ones that stand out to you just to.
Those two are the most powerful, but if you just Google, literally, if you just Google recovery or support, loved ones, dealing with addiction, you will literally get thousands of hits now. There's articles, there's all kinds of things. I would also suggest just writing, just journalizing what you're feeling. It really helps sometimes to just write how you feel, because sometimes you don't even know how you're feeling until you start to write, and it just helps to get it out. And it's something that you can write down for yourself. You can get everything that you're feeling at that moment in time out without, you know, possibly worrying about affecting somebody's feelings or not saying the right thing. You can write whatever you feel at that moment down. And then if you need to come back to it later, you come back to it later.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe that. I mean, I wrote a book called Rewired, and in my book, I encourage everyone to journal. And there's a section for family members in there of how to address somebody that may be dealing with an addiction. And like you said, there's, I mean, I know that recovery.org is fantastic. There's books out there as well. I mean, there's information, there's TED Talks. I mean, there's so much out there. I mean, to use the internet for a good thing is awesome. And there is tons of help out there. So I appreciate you sharing that. And then you also worked with Heroes in Recovery. Yes. Is that right? And can you speak a little bit about what that is? And
so Heroes in Recovery is a program where they have a lead advocate program where it's for people who have either obviously gone to recovery and are in the recovery community, and also family members of loved ones with addiction. And the whole point behind Heroes in Recovery is to break the stigma surrounding addiction. So we are out, we are sharing our story, we are talking about it, we write about it, we hold events in our community, all to break the stigma surrounding addiction. Because the theory is, if you can share your story, and everyone can connect to a story. Maybe, you know, sometimes you see these articles and you hear all these numbers flying around and it goes over your head, or you can't relate, but everyone can relate to a story. And mm-hmm. everyone knows someone who has been touched by addiction, whether it's a family member, a friend, a coworker. Everyone knows someone who's been touched by addiction. So by sharing our stories and putting it out there for everyone to see, we mm-hmm. break the stigma surrounding addiction, and we help people, whether that's a person suffering from addiction or their family members, know that there's nothing to be ashamed of and that there's help available and that mm-hmm. we understand.
Absolutely. And that there's hope, you know, that there's actual recovery. I think that's really, you know, it's hard for people that are in it to see that.
You can't see it. When you're in it, you can't see it. All you're literally yeah. trying to do as a family member is just get through the day without getting
survive.
That
mm-hmm.
That's the thing that, unless you've been through it, it's so hard to explain that dread that you feel every single day when you don't know that you,
yeah.
at some moment, you just know you're going to get that call. So you don't see any hope and you don't see any light. But mm-hmm. groups like, you know, Heroes in Recovery show you that there is recovery is possible. Not only is it mm-hmm. possible, it's incredible. It's possible.
Mm-hmm. 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 Amazing things happen. Seriously. It's, you know, people have told me that when I was changing my life almost 10 years ago. And now I have seen thousands upon thousands and thousands of people through the years that, you know, get it, that get recovery, that continue on these recovery paths, their lives blossom in ways which you can't even imagine. And,
right.
You know, and like you said too, it's about lifting the stigma. I mean, we have to be open about it. You cannot be ashamed of it. Everybody has been through something. Everyone's been dealt some cards, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more that we discuss it, the better off everyone is. And, you know, especially with your daughter too. I mean, I speaking to people that have children out there,
mm-hmm.
how is she doing with it today? And how have you related it to her in terms of not personalizing it? It's not about her. It had nothing to do with her, because I know a lot of children I work with, especially feel that way. They internalize
yeah.
it and they, yeah. So how have you been able to kind of get your daughter through that and maybe
so
give some tips?
Yeah. So when she was younger, when she was a teenager, I had got her the Alateen book, that mm-hmm. she read, couldn't get her to go to meetings, but we would talk about it. As much as she was comfortable talking about it. So it's not that I pressed her. She's kind of like her father and I, in that we don't necessarily, we talk about things, but we deal with it. So if it's mm-hmm. too much to bear and I, you know, she felt like she needed to talk, we talked about it. But I got her the Alateen book. I couldn't get her to a meeting, but one of the things that I loved about the Heroes in Recovery process is that I had to do interviews. You had to interview people. Who were, you know, dealing with recovery. So I had the honor and the privilege of interviewing my daughter. So
amazing.
It was eye-opening. There were things that I did not know that she never told me that I found out in this interview process. And
oh, cool.
one of the things, she did feel that part of this was her fault.
Uh-huh,
I never
uh-huh.
knew that. And right. I, you know, when she said that, you know, your automatic reaction is, why would you feel that way? Of course it's not
of
your
course.
Fault. But that's easy for us to say. But she was a child. She didn't know.
Right,
so
exactly.
going, you know, dealing with it the way she dealt with, she wrote. She's a writer, too, so she wrote a lot. She's an uh-huh. artist. She's a creative by nature. So she would draw. She would write. She would paint. Uh-huh. She had all these outlets to kind of get this out of her. Mm-hmm. And then once her father went through the process and came out the other side, it's like she said, I was so proud of him. And she also said, I understand, Mom, why you didn't talk about a lot of things. Like you talked about things with me
but
at the point
it.
That you know,
yeah.
I was comfortable. She was comfortable, age appropriate, all of
yeah.
that. But she said, I understand now why you kept some things from me, because I didn't want to give her all the dirty
sure.
details.
Sure, of
and
course.
And she said,
no.
I really, and this really touched me. She said, I really appreciate you doing that now. I really do. And I understand. And I just got teary, because it's like, I was trying to do the best Erica that I could. And I was just praying that it was going to be okay and that she would be okay. And to hear her say now, all these years later, thank you so much for that. I understand. And I love you for doing that was just.
What a blessing.
That's all you could do as a mom. That's all you can do.
Well, you've been an amazing mom. So what a blessing.
Oh,
thank you for all your work that you do. And thank you for using your voice and speaking your truth. You're our hero, obviously, in every community for this. Can you tell everyone where they can find you if they want to get in touch with you? You're a writer. Just give your email or any websites you want.
So I tend to be on Twitter a lot. My Twitter handle is @virtual_Nadine, N-A-D-I-N-E. Again, Twitter has been phenomenal in terms of supporting people in recovery, supporting the loved ones of people in recovery. There is just so much love and support there that Twitter has been a place that I try to visit, if not every day, every other day. There's a weekly chat. The Twitter chats are very, very helpful in terms of getting support and information out there. It's called the CADA Chat, C-A-D-A, CADA Chat, Coalition Against Drug Abuse. That happens every Thursday at 1 p.m. I believe it's 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and then 4 p.m. Eastern. Again, recovery.org. But if people want to connect with me, honestly, the best place to get me is Twitter. I'm always there.
Okay, everyone, find her at virtual_Nadine. Thank you so much for being with us today. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman. Have a great day and stay well.